G2, number 2B.
Then we begin to calculate things which have never been calculated perhaps before. Then I can see if I'm here, for instance, I can calculate that very definitely by these two coordinates, you see. And if I want to go there, it's already calculated by two coordinates, and this is the way I'm going. In other words, we do not need all the millions of places from here to here. If I go on a plane in New York, and there is cloud and cloud and cloud until I am in London, I don't see anything on the globe, but I know the coordinates, and I go along the coordinates, every step by step by step by step by step, and I can creatively create exactly those calculations which are necessary for a specific case. Again, it gives a wonderful sense of how science is taking a redundant situation and through building categories or super symbols can reduce the whole to, I wouldn't say to simplicity, but to uniformity, to categories, to systems. And second, enable one to calculate any point, any idea in the realm of being. Which means, in the first place, I have to know what is the system category I need the textbook. In the second place, I close the textbook and I begin to be creative. And it's the creative aspect of the science. Know how the Oxford Dictionary says that science also gives those methods, includes trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truth. So here we find that science has two great aspects. First, they show us how to analyze being not into truth, but to find those categories which are of greatest uniformity, and therefore great simplicity, this is the A, and B would be to use those categories in a creative way, always free from everything which is of the nature of details, of the nature of what one has learned and memorized, and so on, and so on. Then the consciousness opens really at infinitum. I would say at infinitum, yes. At infinitum, sorry. Yes, at infinitum. Again, I would like to show you something. See, yes, I take this one first. Yes. See? Oh, we don't see it anymore. Sorry, this little thing just doesn't stick on the end, you know. See, this is now what comes out of it. If we have a truth or a fact, now we have said we can't leave that fact just as a fact. Can't just leave that little cut out of that thin as what it is. It only yields, really, its bigness, or only yields its true interpretation, if it's really seen as in the whole of the picture. You know, sometimes what you call a criminal story, what you call them crimis? A detective story, and only right at the end you begin to realize and see what happened there at the beginning. See? So, a truth is only then a truth. See? When it is seen within this whole, not as a fact. But the whole we have seen there is really something which has many categories, which has structure. And so the main thing is in any science is to structuralize their structure and to restructure all of these categories, which means that, therefore, each truth must be seen as a structure. Can you see that? That each truth is not a truth. Each truth, each fact, is a whole structure. What structure means, I'm going to try to show later on, today or tomorrow. But I just want to bring forth the fact, you see, that today in physics, whatever it is, you see, they never anymore define something by a definition. We were brought up in school by knowing definitions. Definition of what is gravity, definition of what is the attraction, definition of what is this and that. Today, in science, in all the sciences, they are no more asking for definitions because definitions are too finite. Define means to make final. But in the infinite, nothing is final. And funny enough, Mrs. Z never gives the definition of God. On 465, she doesn't say what is the definition of God. And we see that that is not a definition of God. In my books, I have always written that's the definition of God. It doesn't matter. We go forward and forward. It doesn't matter what we have been doing, and somehow we have to start somewhere. But we can see that today, everything that has to be explained is explained by structure. Gravitation is no more defined as in our days, but today gravitation is defined as structure. Matter is no more defined as in our days when we went to school, it's defined as structure. Everything is now defined as structure. We see that what it means. And what a much bigger and much more embracing concept we get if we see this. Here I just want to leave the thought, you see, the logic or rational thinking, anyway I think it is, see, to see that one truth is never an isolated truth. Principle is never to be found in isolated ideas. It's always an idea of the whole. We can't separate the truth or one truth or a fact from the whole. Therefore, every fact must always be defined through the whole and from the whole. And the whole is not like in mystics, just the whole. And not like in religion, just something embracing lots of facts. But it is system and structure. The whole is system and structure. And therefore, each fact must be seen as a structural fact. And we will see how the Bible, how the textbook gathers quite an enormous greatness and thickness at the moment to somehow touch on that. Yes. So, up to now, I think, have I made myself clear about this atomistic thinking, which is not sufficient, which demands science. Namely, science, which means first categories. Then the categories must be seen as points of intersecting each other. And you need at least two categories intersecting each other, building a system. That system then really is the basic of structure, because you can constantly systematize, restructure a system, and every time you get something new and more. And so we have seen as a further point that the whole must never be left out of it. That the whole, that each fact is an aspect of the whole. A fact is not a one part of the whole. Each fact is the whole, but seen from another aspect. The whole always in a different light, But it's always the whole. And somehow, you see, that conscious image that made that curve going that way, that and turn up way, the moment mankind began to realize, round about Mrs. Eddy's time, in all the various sciences, that the fact is not a fact per se, and that one fact is added to the next in a linear way like this. But the moment consciousness began to realize that each fact is the whole, that everything turned upside into the infinite. And so we will become aware more and more that each fact must be seen always as the whole, as an aspect of the whole. And that only from the whole we can really interpret rightly a specific fact. Therefore, a specific situation, a specific event, can never be rightly interpreted as we perceive it, as we see it, as we think about it. It can only be rightly interpreted from the whole. And seen not as a point of event, but as a point of intersection of the great categories of being. Yeah. I think this is the main point I wanted to show about the atomistic thinking. Why this is not sufficient. So let's go to the next one. The next one I felt was the linear way. That's the atomistic. And now I feel we can show the linear way. The linear thinking. What do I mean with the linear thinking? See, the atomistic thinking was like this. Here a point, here a point, here a point, here a point, here a point. This is atomistic. The linear is different. The linear takes these points and makes a chain of it, an order, a sequence, like this. Then you have a linear development. Now, how is it with our books? Our books are written, printed, just in these point-like ways here. These are the sentences, these are the words, these are the sentences, these are the paragraphs, written. That which is read here, that which makes it linear, is not written in any book. That is something which the reader puts into it, to carry in between. To carry in between means interpretare, interpretation. That is, the read here is that which the reader makes. That is not possible to be printed. You can see that very, very easily. Very easily. I don't know, some of you have heard my story, perhaps already once, or some perhaps not. I always like to take the story and say Hamlet. And say Hamlet has 3,000 of these sentences in it. And you take a scissor and you cut out each sentence out of Hamlet, each one, and put it into a pot and turn it all over, mix it, and then you take one by one out. You put it again, one by one. The amount of facts, the amount of stations, the amount of sentences, the amount of words remain the same. You get the same story. It's a monkey story, no? It's a monkey story. Why? Because they have not been put into order. But what means order? Where is order? The order is not in the sentence. The order is in the arrangement of sentence. And even if you have the arrangement of sentence, you give Hamlet to one, to the second, and to the third, and each one reads the same, and yet does he actually read the same Hamlet? Because he has a different mentality, he puts in between those red things, he puts his concept in between. And so the one says it's a wonderful story, the other one says it's a rotten story. The one says, oh, it's great. The other says, I haven't understood a thing what he wants to say. Can you see that the connection, that which is in between, that which is not in the book, is the main thing? That again, we begin to realize that order is something which is not written, something which is of the nature of consciousness, and therefore it's subjective, and each one has another view on Hamlet or on any other book. And which one is it? Each one reads the Bible, and these are the points, and each one reads the textbooks, and these are the sentences, and each one gets something different out of it. Is that different out of it? Right? What determines who has read Hamlet right and who has read Hamlet wrong? You see? It can't be the subjective reader. So, in general, in like Hamlet, one will say, well, if I read it, the best way as the writer of it has written it, then the best way, when I'm near to the right interpretation. Also, one would study Shakespeare, one would study his age, one would study what is all around about it, and so on, what all the story around about it, and then read with that consciousness and say, now I read with Shakespeare's consciousness, I read Hamlet. Then he comes nearer to interpreting these red things aright. What about the Bible and the textbook? The Bible and the textbook are not written by human consciousness, as far as we believe, but they are written by inspiration, by the divine mind, and therefore it shows that these statements by themselves really do not reveal, by themselves, do not reveal the textbook, do not reveal the Bible. It is only then when we can read it from the standpoint of the divine mind, and of the structure of the divine mind. See, can you see? We have seen before that every fact must be a fact in the whole. The whole is not a diffuse whole, an undifferentiated whole. It's a structured whole. And therefore only with a structured mind, a structured mind, capitalized mind, with a structured, capitalized mind, I can read what has been written and dictated by that very same mind. So this leads us just one step further to see that the atomistic approach to being, the atomistic approach to the Bible, the atomistic approach to the textbook doesn't do, not even the subjective approach, not even the diffuse approach of the one mind, but only really the structured consciousness can read the Bible and the textbook. Now, Mr. Dolley has begun, you see, that's his great point, but he began to show that the atomistic approach to Christian Science is not enough. And so he has begun to show sequences. That was, so to say, his first step. The sequences of the first stage leading to the second, leading to the third, leading to the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh. That was, you see, that was his great point, because the first day, the second day, the third day, and so on, were in the Bible since how many thousand years, and have been read by millions of people, but read by millions of people who did not have a ordered consciousness. And therefore they could never, though they read it a million times, they could never see the story in it. They could never interpret and put in between what really needs to be put in between. Namely, that the one must be the first and cannot be the second. And why the second must be followed by the third, and why the third cannot be the second. And shows the reason for this order and the sequence of this order. And shows how this order naturally then shows how this is not an order of the 7 days, just the 7 days, not even just the order of the commandments or the beatitude, or just the order of the third degree, or anything. Sorry, the stuff of those chokes just tickle me. Not only that, he began to see that this order is a universal order. It's a universal order of creativity. And so he put it even in his own words, and he said, this order is really the order of creative ability, of unfoldment, of identity, of classification, individualization, constant, and unity with God. He put it in his own words as a law of universal creativity. By God, you know, I wish I would find somebody who could take today what the world, not me, what the world is writing about the law of creativity. I will wish that. You come across this law of creativity always in the seven-step way, wherever you look now. You can take Hutchinson. He gives the law of creativity in the sevenfold way. You can take Ott, he gives it in the sevenfold way. You can take Buchholz, he gives it in the sevenfold way. You can take the art of the learning computers, how to feed a computer for learning processes. It's in sevenfold way. And if you can read that nice little book of Webb, who is an advertising agent, who says, how do I get creative ideas? And he gives it in a sevenfold way. The world is full today, full, full, full. Every size is full of a sevenfold creativity theory. And we stand here and don't do anything else. But you will not. But you know, that's the world. And Gordy said, Christian Zionist is the world. He said it. It is. And if somebody would come along and would, for instance, have the ability and the intellectual capacity and insight and education to take all these people who think this John Dolly thought, what was it, 1916, around about that, doesn't matter, 1 year more or less. But since 1936, around about, especially in the last around about 50 or 60. The world is full of it. Full of it. Why? Very simple. Those people have seen, we have come along the horizontal, the horizontal, the horizontal, the horizontal, the horizontal, and it's a long way to go the horizontal. And then they have seen, but there were some scientists who by the vertical, by the intuition, by inspiration, by the flair, whatever you can call it, could bang on, have the right answer. Bang on. And so they said, there must be a law. We don't believe in chance. The natural scientist said, we don't believe in chance, we believe in law. The only thing we can see is that we don't know the law of creativity. And so, since this time here, they began to investigate in the university, everywhere, what is the law of creativity. There must be a law which enables everyone to learn not the old way of logic, of adding consciousness, but there must be a law which one can teach how to receive enlightenment, how to receive intuition, how to receive the sudden embrace of revelation. And every time they analyze that law, they come to the seven stages, which John Dolly has seen 20, 30 years ago. The world will cease in the future. But John Dolly wasn't just a man. He wasn't just a man. The caliber of him, sorry, I'll show you during this weekend the caliber of it. If we see what he has really done, and I think we will see. I let you have a good copy.